Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with homework? Are they asking questions that you're not sure you can fully answer? IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids. It covers math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed. This program will improve your kids' grades. Studies done in almost every state in the country. The kids who had IXL are consistently doing better. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid no matter the age or personality. And it doesn't have to eat up all your time. One subscription gets you everything for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. So don't miss out. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/audio. Visit IXL.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 48 of Comic Book Nation, the official podcast of ComicBook.com. I'm your host, Kofi Outlaw, and with me today, I got a great crew. I got Matt Aguilar.
What up?
And one of our original Trinity members is back, Mr. Brandon Davis.
Hello, everyone.
And you've seen him once before, but he's always around. He's one of our fantastic editors, horror gurus, Star Wars gurus. We need him for a lot of stuff, whatever we need outsourced, basically. Mr. Patrick Cavanaugh is back with us.
What up?
And we got a bunch of fun stuff to talk about today. News is happening. It looks like Hollywood is getting back to life here, and that also means some things are dying off. So we got a kind of a mixed bag to talk about today. Some fun new things, some favorite things that are going to go away. And this is real life in 2020, folks, so let's just dive in. Up first in our news segment, we're going to be talking about a bunch of horror movie delays that Universal just announced. A Netflix cancellation that's got people up in arms. A new Batwoman has been found. And if we have some time, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's going on with Comic-Con at home. So let's start at the top with that. And plus, Mr. Brandon Davis is here because we're going to review Netflix's The Old Guard, and he's going to tell us how it is. You'll probably be watching it by the time you hear this, but he got to see it early. He got to talk to the cast. So we're going to check in with him. All right, news. Let's talk about horror. Horror, Patrick, this is your forte, but we just got some Universal has decided that it is pulling up stakes, and they're taking a Sony approach. They weren't waiting for any later coronavirus delays anymore. They just kind of felt like the writing's on the wall and they want their movies to do well. So the big one was, of course, Halloween Kills, which was scheduled for October of this year. The sequel to David Gordon Green and Danny McBride's Halloween, kind of direct sequel reboot. I don't know what we call these things anymore. Direct sequels, I guess, is just the term we use for things.
Rebootquels.
Rebootquels, yeah.
Requel.
Requel, yeah. Yeah, whatever you want to call it. So, I mean, that was a successful relaunch of the whole Michael Myers franchise and concept, kind of took it back to its roots, added a few new things. And so we were looking forward to Halloween Kills. There's two more films, Halloween Kills, Halloween Ends. It's going to be a trilogy, and we were all looking forward to this October, but Universal felt, they're not holding that beachhead anymore. They're not thinking October is going to be a real good time for people to flood back into movie theaters. So they're pulling up stakes, and Halloween Kills is now getting knocked back an entire year until October of 2021. And we got that note from John Carpenter, was it? Yeah, he dropped that note. I got confused because we were doing this so fast, but along with that, he did give fans just a little caveat in the form of the first Halloween Kills teaser, which was about like 33 seconds or so, which looks like it's from the very opening of the film, presumably. We don't know that for sure, but presumably, which because it basically picks up from the final moments of the previous film, which, spoiler from 2018, but the last film ended with Laurie Strode, Jamie Lee Curtis, kind of luring Michael Myers into her like hobo shack out in the woods, which turned out to be a disguise for a major fire trap she was able to build with spikes and everything. And she basically trapped Michael Myers in a basement, and the place was set on fire and burn him to death. And, you know, Laurie, her daughter, and her granddaughter all rode away in the back, truck, presumably headed for medical care because they were pretty beat up and slashed up. And so these first trailer for teaser for Halloween Kills basically picks up right from there, from them in the back of the truck. And as they're kind of driving away from the cottage, they see the excellence of first responders as they are headed towards this burning building to, you know, presumably put out these flames, which we all know is going to end poorly for those poor first responders. Because, you know, it's Michael Myers, y'all. He's kind of hard to kill, even though he's slow moving. And so, you know, they'll get there probably in the nick of time, do a great job putting out a fire, but unwittingly unleash a killer again. And I thought this was a good teaser. Like, this was actually, I mean, this is a way to soften the blow when you tell people you have delays of a movie, right? You just give them a little piece that's going to get them hyped. Yeah, it just looked, it threw you right back in there into the kind of the high tension and emotion. And I love the kind of subtle suggestion they did, just showing you the fire trucks and leaving you to kind of connect the dots, like, oh crap, like this isn't going to go well, which is a lot of the fun with like, with what kind of the winking element of this new Halloween is. They understand we've all seen a lot of slasher films and they can have a lot more fun with kind of playing with that. But yeah, I thought that was pretty good. Patrick, what'd you think and how are you feeling? How are you dealing with Halloween Kills delayed depression today?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, obviously the 2018 Halloween is a sequel. There's no doubt about it. But as we say, it's also kind of a reboot in the ways it echoes the original movie. And Halloween Kills is now setting the stage to echo the original Halloween 2, because that Halloween took place, the same thing, like the opening scenes were the very end of the original Halloween. They go to Haddonfield Memorial Hospital, and that's the big, the reveal of Michael Myers being Laurie Strode's brother. So Halloween Kills is clearly setting up to echo the original Halloween sequel, and even the pumpkin that we see in the very first shot of Halloween Kills teaser is the pumpkin from the opening credits of Halloween 2. So, like, there's all this mirroring, all these echoes of that Halloween 2. But I think what I'm terrified of is Halloween 2 set up the idea of the brother-sister component. And if that's what they do with this new one, or they try and create some sort of connection like that, that's going to be pretty disappointing for me, because John Carpenter's whole idea was Michael Myers is essentially like this, not even an agent of chaos. He just represents this lurking, looming danger or threat that doesn't need any sort of explanation.
Yeah, to go back historically, because I'm a big fan of like actual horror history and like what, because horror came out in the original horror films that we all now kind of gratuitously love were actually based in real things. And like Halloween was, and why it was so effective was in the 70s, like, you know, this idea of satanic cults and all this stuff was popping up. And it was this time where the idea of the suburbs, you know, the safety of the suburbs got shattered. That's like a lot of what the end of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood's all about. Like this idea, like at the end of the 60s into the 70s, this whole idea of these safe neighborhoods, the safe world was kind of broken. And Michael Myers is literally the idea that you could live in the smallest, nicest suburban town and some random maniac can just show up one day and just tear apart everybody's lives. And
yeah, and that's why he's referred to as the Shape. You know, like it's not that he's a killer. It's not that he's Michael Myers. He's the Shape of this. Could be anybody. Could be anybody under that mask terrorizing teenagers in this small town. So obviously, while I'm disappointed that I have to wait that much longer, I think what I'm also disappointed for is that they didn't capitalize on doing like first week of October 2021, Halloween Kills, last week of October 2021, Halloween Ends, like just separate them by a couple of weeks, because we've never really seen a movie series do that before. Like I know The Matrix, they just did, you know, a short amount of time between
6 months
or so. Right, between Reloaded and Revolution, and that was really cool. So I really wish they could have done like next year October Michael Myers completely dominating the Halloween cycle. But you know, what are you gonna do?
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, I'm taking it a step further, because you point out the original Halloween 2, and cool, what ideas. I'm actually scared about is they're gonna try to kind of refit Halloween 2, the original, and Zombies Halloween 2, because we haven't talked about that component. But the first one ends with a suggestion that there's something going on with Laurie Strode's granddaughter, who this is centered around, Allison. There's that final shot of her in the truck holding the knife and kind of suggesting that like this legacy of violence could pass to her because of what she's been through and all that stuff. And Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 was what's her name? Scout Taylor.
Yes. Compton.
Yes, the Gal Taylor. I got that part right. Yeah, her Laurie Strode is revealed when she finds out she's his sister. That movie's big climax is she gets warped by Michael Myers' mania and becomes like a psycho killer herself. And then they have that knockoff Psycho ending where she's, you know, sitting there and she's crazy as hell now. And she's a killer. And I'm kind of worried they're going to try to go back for that. And it's like, please, nobody needs to drag that up. Like, please, just leave that alone.
Yeah, I definitely have faith that David Gordon Green and Danny McBride and Scott Teams, the writers of these upcoming movies and the last one as well, that they're sticking with the original core concept of Michael Myers and the shape. But, of course, you know, with the last Halloween, they found a way to reference like Season of the Witch, which doesn't even have Michael Myers. So like, I know that they have respect and faith for the franchise, but they're not going to do anything just because they feel obligated to. So I'm hopeful, but you know, I guess we'll find out in 15 months or so.
Oh my God. Well, there's not to just dig this hole a little deeper, but that wasn't the only year long delay. The Forever Purge was supposed to come out this summer and was supposed to be here like any minute, really. The next Purge movie, Purge 5, for those who are keeping count. And that also got knocked back a year. And that hurts because I was just like, man, if there was ever a year for a Purge movie, like, this is the one.
Yeah.
By 2021, I'm worried that I might not want to go see a Purge movie. I'm be like, yeah, man, I lived through 2020. I'm good.
Talk about letting all the letting the world do the marketing for you. Like it would just come out and go, here's this thing. You know what this is. And
then Purge just like ain't put it out stopping there. Anytime soon, people.
Yeah, like you don't have to do any selling. So
yeah, and I was actually surprised by that one because that seems like, I mean, the Purge series has been made for like around like 10 million or less ever since the first one was made for 3 million. The sequels have all been made for 10 million or less, and they all pull in, you know, 100 million plus, making them some of the most profitable movies out there, which is why we keep getting them. And this just feels like one you could have done on some kind of service or something. Like we could have gotten this on demand.
Yeah, especially since like no trailers have come out, no posters for it. So like this one might be disappointing. Right, but it's also like not surprising that I'm sure if you told someone, hey, guess what, they're delaying The Purge 5 by a year, the reaction would be, there's a new Purge coming out, you know?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. That's what I thought when I saw the layout.
Exactly.
I was like, I forgot it was coming. Like, yeah. So
I don't know if that's because they don't have faith in this one or if, you know, like, I don't know what it is that, you know, this was announced last year or so that there was another Purge. There's been no marketing. They haven't even, like, put out a press blast of it's officially called the Forever Purge.
Yeah, I didn't know until I did this article.
Yeah, it's always been buried in, you know, the fourth paragraph of some variety, you know, type of story. So, yeah, I don't know why they're burying it, but, you know, maybe this means they have a year to make it better.
It hasn't been a good year for The Purge. The TV series got canceled, so. Yeah,
you really liked that, too.
I did like the TV. I liked the TV show a lot. I was a fan. But, yeah, I mean, I like The Purge. You know me. It's never a secret. But, yeah, this is a weird one, so you're going to keep an eye on that. And last but not least, Candyman was also delayed, but it's not a killer delay. At least it's the first delay. yeah, so it's being pushed back from September to October 16th. So it's the canary in the coal mine, essentially.
Not too bad.
Yeah, it's just tough, and I totally understand where these studios are coming from, that they want these movies to go out, they want people to see these movies, but, you know, July 9th, movie theaters are not open. Like, I don't understand, there's no precedent of, well, maybe October will be fine, well, maybe December, well, maybe 2022 will be fine. Like, there's no signal of when these movies will be able to open wide. So it really just seems like they're, you know, the band on the Titanic where they're just like, well, we're doing our best, but this could you know, blow up in our faces. So,
yep, it's going to be real interesting. So we'll keep an eye on all of that. That's what's going on in horror. Oh, no, we're not done with horror. That's just adult horror. Let's move on to teen horror. So on the Netflix side of thing, Brandon was pretty kind of torn up about this one. The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina has been canceled, BD.
And I haven't slept in a week.
I know, man, but it's 2020, and we've learned to, we've had to have deeper resolve than this. But yeah, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, the Sabrina the Witch reboot, that was kind of a, I don't know how to describe it. It was a big hit, cult hit, however you want to describe it on Netflix. It's going to drop season 4, but that's going to be it. Patrick, you were also, as our horror expert, the person we forced to watch this. No, I'm kidding. No, please don't send me like, yeah. I don't want any hexes from Sabrina fans. I'm kidding. I was thrilled about how they approached the series. I kind of liked it, and I like the Mad Men actress getting that role. And so, like, yeah, I'm not like gleeful about this in any way. But Patrick,
yeah,
take it through. What's going on with this show?
I mean, shortly after the first season premiered, they said, "Hey, we're renewing this through 4 seasons." So that definitely for a Netflix series, when you're always like, oh, this one season came out, when are we going to hear about season 2? Like, to get renewed that far ahead of time for that long, like, that's impressive and shows that they had a lot of faith in it. Yeah, like you said, Kiernan Shipka, the actress, people love her, and understandably so, whether it be from Mad Men. She's great in this horror film with Emma Roberts, the Black Coat's daughter, which I think is on Netflix. Like, she loves horror, so this seemed like a perfect fit. But it's about a teenaged witch, so you can only have this series last for so long. You can't have her go off to college or become an adult, because then it's a completely different series. And also, it's, again, with Netflix, it's not like it got canceled after the 3rd season and they had plans for the 4th. It's more just they're not renewing it. Like, they get to tell, what, like 32, 35 episodes. They have like a Christmas holiday special a couple years back. So like, it had its run. It's better. I would rather have a show end on a high note instead of just dragging it on forever. You know, like, I'm sure BD would agree that, like,
don't do it.
Maybe if Lost had been fewer.
Oh! Wow.
Shots fired.
Shots fired.
I say this while I'm currently rewatching season 2. So I love Lost. But still, like, I would have rather a condensed vision that got to pull off everything it wanted to, ended on a high note, said its goodbyes, and then allowed you know, people to just continue to love and support it. So.
Well, not Penny's boat should have been the
it makes down. It makes sense too that, like, Netflix is more, they've shown more of a like Nickelodeon-esque model to, like, the way they renew shows. Like, Nickelodeon only has shows last for so many years, and then they pretty much pull the plug on all of them. Like, it doesn't matter how successful they are or not, they kind of cap it. And Netflix, aside from like Orange Is New Black and maybe, like, you know, one other show, like, they really don't tend to go much farther than 5 to 6 max. Like, that's like, Netflix shows don't seem to get 9-10 season things like network, traditional network TV. And also, they're shorter episode runs anyway. So, like, this, yeah, I kind of read this as more like, oh, it was, they decided to, like, hey, tell your story, here's the whole thing, and then we're gonna kind of move on, as opposed to, like, it's not performing, cut the cord. Like, that, you know, it seemed to be more that way.
Cancel culture. Got and somebody
you,
else.
You look at every Marvel series like Daredevil or Jessica Jones, like, all of those are 13 episodes, when I think everyone agrees they probably could have been like 8 or 10 episodes per season.
Yeah. Max.
And exactly. Yeah. So it's like, Sabrina had 8 episode seasons. Stranger Things now is sticking to like 8-9 episode seasons. I think the fans would agree. Sure, it sucks that this show's not going to be around anymore, but you'd rather have 4 seasons of 8 episode seasons where you love all of it than, yeah, you know, trying to just bleed whatever you can from
it. And let's be honest, Netflix can do this now because they've scored enough of a cult hit with this that, like, I mean, isn't there already a comic or something like that?
Well, this is based on the
comic. On the comics, yes. But yeah. I mean, a comic, like, haven't they recreated this particular iteration of the mythos yet? Like,
well, This is currently based on the more like archy horror line that they, where it's, you know, like Jughead's a werewolf and Veronica's a vampire. This is based on that. And it's the creator of the series wrote that comic.
Which the comic is somehow even darker than the show.
So my point is, like, this is a brand, though, that can get, like, the Buffy treatment, right? Like, they can basically keep this thing going. If they
want. This can continue in perpetuity in the comics, yes.
Yeah, so, yeah, we're all good. All right. So, send your hate mail to Brandon Davis about Sabrina or Lost.
Why? Or whatever you feel. It's a Sabrina campaign leader.
Now something that's getting not coming back, the opposite of going away, we're getting a new Batwoman back. I really stumbled through that without saying the word black, but I managed to do it. But yes, we have a new Batwoman. Ruby Rose left the show. We thought we were going to get a new Kate Kane. Then the CW came out and was like, nah, son, we're just going to make a new character. And we were all kind of like, I don't know about that. But yeah. So Bay found a new Batwoman, and we're going to take a break and pay some bills. But when we come back, we'll tell you about the new Batwoman and what's all going on with that. So stay tuned.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
All right. So after that awesome teasing, dangling, you know, teaser right there. I'm real good with the words today. Let's just talk about what's going on. So Ruby Rose left. Kate Kane is going to be out. And so there will be a new Batwoman character, a new creation, not from DC Comics, but a new creation for the show. And now we know that they've cast God Friended Me actress Javissa? What? Leslie, I'm going to go with. Javissa Leslie.
I would probably lean towards, like, but I you know what? I'm not even going to put it out there because I don't know how to pronounce it, so I'm not going to mangle. So
I'm just
going to
say Javissa.
Yeah. Javissa Leslie. That's what I would go with.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, and so she'll be playing Ryan Wilder, and we got a kind of synopsis for who Ryan Wilder, this new character, would be, and it was just kind of like, and we were kind of ragging on it at first because it was kind of like a weird catch-all.
Javissa.
What's that?
Javissa.
Nice. Thank you. This man's a professional right here. You can tell he talks to a lot of people. So Javissa Leslie will be playing Ryan Wilder, who is this – when we were kind of ragging on her because it was like this weird focus group composite of a character. It was like she's bubbly but hard-edged. She's brilliant but vulnerable. But basically, she was a criminal for a long time. She worked kind of like on the wrong side of the law in Gotham. And she was kind of like a drug runner and all this stuff until she kind of takes over for Kate Kane as Batwoman. So Javissa Leslie is going to be stepping in to play her. And obviously the big change is this will be a African-American Batwoman, which now we're going to have to go through this whole thing, which is not a bad thing. Because, I mean, it's going to be interesting, and it's going to be kind of cool. And I was not expecting somebody like this to get cast in this role after hearing the description of Ryan Wilder. But I'm actually kind of curious about this and to see how this character kind of plays out. Just not looking forward to the wonderful conversations we're going to be having in 2020 about this.
Yeah, I saw, and I can't remember who tweeted it. But, yeah, I mean, as this announcement kind of started making the rounds, someone was very like, okay, so here's the thing. This is great. But, you know, as we saw with like the Arrowverse, it has a great fandom, but it also has this very vocal pocket that when they don't like something, they just like annihilate it. They just go all completely aggressive and like don't know how to communicate on social media. Candace Patton has been like the target of like a lot of this kind of junk. And, you know, with her, it's like, okay, now you're bringing someone else in. Please, for the love, do a better job of like defending, coming to their defense, that kind of thing, you know, set up for success type of deal, because Candace didn't get a lot of that support from the people. And as people know, Flash always got grief, and so did she. So hopefully they do a much better job this time around, because like Kofi said, yes, it's that garbage is going to happen. My biggest thing is, I agree with you. I didn't think they would go this way after seeing the description. I still don't love, like, they explain in the article, like, why, like, that they were going to do the soap opera thing where they just, it's a new person and you just accept that it's Kate Kane. Like, soap operas do that all the time. And honestly, that's still what I would have rather had. You know, I just give her the chance to play Kate Kane. Like, don't make this whole other person and this whole other thing that, you know, doesn't, I don't know how I feel yet about the character, because it is kind of all in the middle. It's all these kind of things, but nothing specific. But, you know, they were like, well, we thought about it, but we decided not to. I still don't necessarily agree with that, but I am excited to see her as Batwoman. Like, so, I mean, I think it's a cool casting. I'm interested to see how it plays out.
BD, how you feeling about this one?
I'm not too familiar with the actress. I mean, I think it's.
I don't think a lot of us are, to be honest.
Yeah, so I mean, it's hard to say. I think it's cool. She's very, like, I don't know. People who are familiar with her are very excited. Like, I looked at the photo and I was like, well, damn, this woman's beautiful. That's pretty much like the only thing I have to offer to it, though, because I don't know much about her. I wasn't particularly interested in Ruby Rose's Batwoman. I think Matt has a bigger appreciation for Kate Kane. He's a bigger fan of that character than I am. So I think his opinion carries more weight on that sort of thing than mine. It's cool. I mean, I'm personally more interested to see what they do with a whole new type of character like this than I would have been if it was just like a normal season two, but I think it's cool.
Do you think she's set up for success, or do you think they're just going to set her up and let her die out there and then get that dump truck full of money up to Ruby Rose's house for season three?
I mean, I don't think Ruby Rose is ever coming back, personally. But I don't think we'll ever see that happen. But I think, you know, it's a CW. I don't think they've really – do they have a history of, like, leaving actors out to dry?
Oh, yeah.
I'm genuinely – I don't know.
I mean, Candace Patton has – in the last, with everything that's gone on between like Me Too and the current protest, she's been one actress you've heard speak up a lot more in recent months, kind of just being more open about not overt things, but like the subtleties of what she's had to deal with, from just, you know, lack of diverse casting to, like Matt said, the backlash to playing these characters like Iris West, who were kind of, you know, who draw out that don't change my character people all over the internet. And so, and the CW doesn't really step in to moderate that. They kind of just let that reach the actors.
Yeah, they just let them deal with it. I mean, the same thing happened with, you know, every Star time Felicity Wars, was yeah. brought up with in the Arrowverse, and every time Olicity was a thing, like, and I'm blanking on her name right now.
Records.
Yeah. Dealt with that throughout her like almost entire run, especially after they became a couple. And it was just like, oh, go deal with all the trolls. Here you go.
I mean, that's gonna I don't know what a network or studio is supposed to do. The Walking Dead has that as, I mean, you have like Carol and Daryl and Ezekiel fans are like literally sending death threats to each other and being in the actors' mentions all the time. I personally think ignoring the people who cause that kind of chaos and stupid arguments is the best route, because then they're like, as soon as they feel recognized, like, I think that makes them like it's the highlight of their day, so they keep going.
And yeah, I hear you, but I think the difference with the CW is the CW makes these casting decisions and then doesn't necessarily like follow through on the support. They choose to make Iris West somebody who looks like Candace Patton, and then they don't come out and say, yo, shut up, we chose this because this is why, and this is why we want it, and this is like what we're doing here.
Like, genuine question. I'm not saying I don't believe you. This is a genuine question. Has like Guggenheim or Berlanti or any of the people behind the show ever like?
I mean, I'm not going to get myself in trouble and say they never have, because like I'd have to check a lot of interviews. But I'm just relating to you that there was some rumblings between the actors themselves that they didn't feel
Interesting. Support. I mean, that's a shame. That's, I mean, they shouldn't have to put up with that. Like, and I mean, I'm sure Javicia, I hope I said that right, is going to have to deal with this. And I hope that the people who have put her in this position will defend her and equip her with whatever she needs to combat that and have a successful show. Like, that's frustrating that that happens.
In the end, I think I'm just most interested to see her, you know, to learn more about her as a performer and to see what she does with this role and how it's received. Because, you know, for all the people worrying about comics and stuff, you got to remember, Batman TV has created some great characters like, you know, Harley Quinn. So it can work. It can work in this direction. You can create, you know, this version of Batman. I keep forgetting. This is not a good sign that I keep forgetting. Ryan Wilder, it's because I hate that name. So Ryan Wilder could become a thing enough that, you know, eventually she leaks into the comics, we'll see.
Absolutely then, right.
Yep. So we'll see. That's Batwoman. And what are we at now? I guess we could talk real quick. Let's talk about some Marvel Comic-Con. So Comic-Con this year is going to be weird because of, thanks, La Rona. We're not going to be at Hall H. We're going to be doing Comic-Con at home. And everybody's kind of curious to see because this is going to be open to everybody. The exclusivity of Comic-Con is kind of out the window this year. A lot of studios are frankly going to be sitting this out in terms of like big trailers and stuff like that. But we are going to get some fun stuff. And ironically, this could be kind of a return to form in terms of like talking about comics and stuff as a highlight. So who would have thunk it, right? Matt, yeah. Why don't you take us through? We got Marvel Comics coming to Comic-Con at home. Tell us what we should be. Should we be looking forward to anything from that, or is it going to be kind of lackluster?
Well, so there's three Marvel panels that are part of this, which I figure the one Brandon's looking forward to the most is the Disney Plus Marvel 616. Would I assume that's correct, Brandon? Is that the one you're probably looking forward to the most?
I mean, yeah.
Okay. Which, you know, that one's going to be kind of like this Lowing weird, like,
enthusiasm.
Yeah, I know, for real. This one's going to be kind of a walk through Marvel history, and it's going to have different filmmakers involved, but then of course they are going to focus a little bit on Disney Plus as well. Most of the Disney Plus stuff, I wouldn't imagine any giant surprises, just honestly, because even if they announce it, like, they don't know when it's going to come out, like with the way things are right now. So they're probably going to hold on a lot of that stuff. But I imagine we'll see at least something really interesting, maybe like a new preview of one of the previously announced shows, that kind of thing. Maybe. Let's hope. The next one is Marvel HQ. This one is more for like the Secret Warriors fans and the fans of like the Disney XD stuff. Maximum Venom is going to have a presence there, which has actually been pretty fun if anyone's watched the Spider-Man series. So that'll be for kind of the younger set. And then the one I'm looking forward to the most is the Next Big Thing panel, which is just essentially all comics. It's all going to be now. Okay, remind me, because I cannot for the life of me remember, is it Ten of Swords or is it X of Swords? I keep saying in my brain
ten of swords.
It's Ten of Swords, right? Okay, for the love of God,
because it's gonna be ten swords.
So they're gonna have that now. That's Kofi's like most anticipated event.
So. I will hurt you virtually.
So he's very excited. There'll be a big focus on that. Of course, there's going to be a big focus on Empire. One of the other things that kind of stuck out to me here, they're going to be looking at Amazing Spider-Man number 850. But honestly, it's really about swords. Like, that's going to be probably where we get some actual details other than just like a giant splash page of like, hey, here's a bunch of people with swords and some cryptic Hickman quote that we try and dissect. We're probably gonna actually get
the
some
whole
legit
panel
details.
Better be just one chart.
That's it, probably will. So I mean, that's, to me, that is actually, like Kofi said, kind of a return to what Comic-Con used to be. It was, you know, like comic stuff was kind of the main draw. This year, because so many studios are kind of just holding things back, it might be some of that again, or not even just comics though, but some of like the TV shows that don't get the shine and the animated series that don't get the shine in a typical year, they're going to be getting their own panels this time. So, I mean, we'll see. I'm interested to see the turnout, but that's Marvel.
All right. Thank you, Matt. Next, we're going to deep dive into our review of The Old Guard, the new Netflix movie. That's going to be the only thing you can see this weekend. Plus, we're going to review some new comics that just came out that we took a look at. So stay tuned for all of that.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
All right, BD. You got to see the old guard. People are going to be coming to this Friday looking for something to watch. And now it's ironic. It's like we've gone back to the old days where there were only three TV stations. Now there's only like three streamers that actually drop new big movies. So we're all kind of slave to Netflix right now. Is the old guard going to give us what we need, BD? I mean, we're in a summer movie season where we have nothing. So is this going to at least provide some good distraction?
I mean, like, when you look at Netflix, you usually like, this could be okay. And then every once in a while, they have a really good one. And this one is pretty good. Actually, I'm happy to say. Like, I was like, oh, comic book movie, Netflix, it's probably going to be all right. It was good. I mean, the cast is really good. I mean, you have Charlize Theron and Kiki
Layton. Are we talking Last Days of American Crime good or, like, good?
I mean, I actually genuinely pretty much enjoyed it. Like it, I thought I was actually surprised by how much I enjoyed it. There are some things I thought were like, all right, I've seen this before, or why did you choose these songs to like upbeat songs? Like for the, I don't know. You know, the moment in Aquaman where Pitbull plays and you're like, wait, what? They do a few of those. And I was like, I don't know about that. And I was like, why is this music playing right now? It's just people. It's like a wide shot of people walking through a market. I don't get anyway. But no, the action is really cool. Charlize Theron with an axe is badass. I mean, like, you already know what you're going to get with her if you've seen her other movies, Atomic Blonde. I mean, she's in Fast and Furious now. She's Furiosa. Well, she was Furiosa. Oh. It's got like some solid. If you read the comic, you kind of know what to expect pretty accurately. But it has some good surprises. It's got some good plot twists. It's got violence. It's got action. It's got a little bit of humor, I guess. It's got decent style. Like it's honestly just, I feel like the best way to describe it is it's a pretty good movie. Like it's not super memorable. It's not reinventing anything. It's kind of a mashup of things we've seen in other movies similar to this that is polished up and then re-delivered and repackaged. And that makes it pretty good.
Now, question, because you mentioned the comic, and like Greg Rucka writes the series, and I adore Greg Rucka's writing. So when you read the series, like, is it like a direct translation of the first series? Is it kind of just like taking the core idea and just kind of spinning it?
Rucka loves to like introduce like a huge concept and then kind of peel it back a little by little. And this is a little bit more forward than your typical, like it's, I feel like it doesn't have that same complexity, even though it sets the stage for those things. I don't want to like spoil anything. It's pretty accurate to the comic. Okay. And there's parts of it that were not going to be in the movie that they added back in, which were really good, which were straight from the comic, that it's a good thing they added them back in. And I'm not going to spoil anything. Oh, but cool. I think, and that's like a huge plot point they were going to take out and they put back in. And when you see it, if you've read the comic, you probably already know, you might already know what I'm talking about. And they took it out and they decided to put it back in, and that ended up putting a whole level of complexity in the movie that we needed. It feels like the movie kind of feels like you take like parts of Hancock, which ironically enough had Charlize Theron in it, and then you put like, I don't know, you mix that with like John Wick and put five of them. And I mean, I really like Marwan Khanzari, who was Jafar in Aladdin, and Luca Marinelli, I believe is how you say his name. They play Yusef and Nikki, and these two characters are immortal characters, just like the rest of the old guard. They're in a relationship. They're very much in love with each other, have been for thousands of years. They bring a lot of heart to the movie. And I really like that. And it's very interesting that you have these characters who essentially are immortal until they're not. And when they're not, it's kind of unknown. And you find a way to add stakes that make it so that there is something worse than death for them, which is very like, you know, you're familiar with that.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually, it exceeded my expectations. I would like to see a sequel. I really would. And it sets the stage nicely for there to be more. And, you know, I think we can dive into the characters more in the future. Now that we've seen them together, I think it's time to start really sinking our teeth into the characters more. But it's a pretty damn good movie.
Cool. Ooh, that got me psyched. All right.
I think you'll like it. I really do. I think you'll like it. I think Kiki Layne and Charlize Theron are awesome together. And I think that relationship between the two guys is really fun and adds a lot of heart to it. And there's just plot twists that are good. If you haven't read the comic, are going to be very exciting for audiences. And Chiwetel Ejiofor is awesome. He's, you know, he's always going to be, you know, you're going to get with him. He's fantastic. His character operates in a bit of a gray area, and that was really cool. And then you have Dudley Dursey, who grew up and became a supervillain. So, by Harry Melling. So that's cool.
All right. That's Netflix's The Old Guard. BD says you should be checking that out if you're just sitting around today.
Also out this weekend is Relic, which is the Russo brothers movie. And that's produced by Jake Gyllenhaal and directed by Natalie James. And that is probably going to be pretty good too, I think.
That movie looks so creepy.
What's that on?
That's going to be on VOD. My review is actually up now, I believe.
All right, Patrick, you're on the spot. Impromptu review. I didn't even know this was happening. Relic.
Relic. It's going to be compared to Hereditary and The Babadook, like those emotionally driven allegorical horror movies. And it's about a woman and her daughter going to investigate why the grandmother has kind of gone missing. And then when she does return to her home, people don't know if it's a psychological thing and she's just kind of suffering through dementia, or if there are like really creepy things that are going on. And so, yeah, it's quite good. It's definitely not going to be for everybody. Tons of people are probably going to complain about it because it's not a traditional, you know, it's not Scream or Paranormal Activity or whatever. Like, it's, again, Hereditary, The Babadook is one of those more emotionally kind of heady philosophical horror movies, but I think it's quite good.
Yeah, that trailer was so unsettling.
I have not watched it. Now I'm excited. You just gave me a thrill. Thank you, Patrick. That's our review of Relic, which you can also check out this weekend on VOD. Moving right from the movie screen to the comic page, let's talk comics. So this week, we're going to try to get through a couple things before we get out of here. We have Batman 94, which is the end of their Dark Design storyline, which we followed here, and the prelude to the Joker War. We have Deceased Dead Planet, a return to that kind of DC zombie horror event. And if we have time, we're going to get into the latest on X-Force because of something. I didn't read that, so I'm not sure why. But Matt had an idea about it. So it's Matt's show right when we get there. All right, Batman 94. Let's get to the conclusion of their Dark Designs. And we're going to be talking full spoilers because there's like no way to talk about this without talking full spoilers. So at the end of Batman, the previous issue 93, there was a big twist. This is all leading up to the big Joker War event, which was supposed to be unfolding right now, but has been delayed, but is still going to be unfolding soon in Batman comics. And this is supposed to be, quote unquote, like the final Batman versus Joker story. And the whole kind of twist to this is this time it's Joker. You know, Joker typically loves just going round and round with Batman and keeping that whole thing going. But now Joker actually wants to kind of reach a goal and get to an end. And to what end will that be? This is the big question. But the big twist in their Dark Designs was Joker stole the entire Wayne fortune from Batman. So Joker, and he knows who Batman is, by the way. Somehow we've been talking about all this. We just kind of, he finally, I mean, there is no kind of hinting or inference. Like, Joker knows Bruce Wayne is Batman. He's stolen his money, and he's fully aware of what the impact of that is. And we know that because in the final chapter of their Dark Designs, it's really an epilogue, this kind of thing. It changes the pace of the story a lot. It feels almost extraneous. And I think I nailed it right, Matt, when I said I felt like this issue would just be like the weird middle child between the actual storyline and then the Joker War storyline. And that's very much what it is. So it's their Dark Designs conclusion, but really just epilogue. And Batman got pretty messed up and injured confronting the designer, who turned out to be a corpse that Joker somehow animated. And so this issue is about him trying to deal with the fact that he's messed up so bad that he's let Joker pull off this master plan, that Gotham is essentially out of his hands. Joker has all the money. There's all these other things that, like Riddler and Penguin, all these designs that the designer put together to kind of make Gotham into this criminal empire that just kind of kept running himself. And Batman got injured, so he's very injured. His leg is stabbed up, and he's just trying to kind of get back on his feet and mount some kind of response plan and get everybody he knows to safety, because he understands that Joker is going to be coming for him on all fronts. And it was kind of a slower kind of stage setting issue where there's like a lot of deep, it was a surprising amount of deep kind of Batman on Batman reflection.
Yeah.
Which I thought was surprising. It was very much very Tom King that I didn't expect. I mean, we were kind of ragging on Tinian for being the exact opposite. But this was like a weird City of Bane move where this issue was very much, I mean, it went back to this. Was that the first time we've ever met this character, Matt? Like the detective?
Yeah. So that was the arch nemesis, the Sherlock Holmes to the designer's Moriarty. But that's the first we've heard of him, but this is the first time we met him.
Yeah, so this is the first time we met him, this master detective. So they basically retconned another piece of Batman's origin, that after Ducard, there was this other dude, the guy who designer was always trying to outwit. And there's a flashback scene where he knows everything about Bruce Wayne after just looking at him for like 10 seconds. He knows like where he trained, where he's come from, all the travels he did in the world, just by details on his clothing and all that stuff. And so, and it's like a weird introspective about Batman wanting to build this other Gotham, and this idea about him like building the Batman. This was like the scary design he had for Gotham and how he's failed. And I didn't really go for that emotional stuff. that wasn't me. I mean, there were just some bullet points we needed to kind of get through in this issue, right?
Yeah.
Like, Catwoman's alive. She's injured, but she's alive. We don't find out what happened to Harley Quinn, who got her neck cut, did we?
We don't yet, though. We just recently, a little earlier today, they released a preview for Joker War Part 2, which will be, I think it's 96, right? Yeah. And that one shows, or at least gives us a preview, that she is alive, and she's sporting the scar on her neck from her punchline fight. And it looks like her and Batman are pretty much going to be kind of teaming up for a bit, because they're both, you know, kind of hunted by Joker and his new right-hand person. And so they kind of both end up on the outs. So that looks to be, there wasn't any dialogue with it, so it was just pages, but she's good. Yay. She's alive.
Harley Quinn's still kicking. And I think the other big thing for me, this issue, was just hearing this kind of different, much more focused side of Joker, who's actually like pulling off a pretty kind of elaborate, masterful plan. And he wants Batman to kind of, I mean, he wants this to be their epic kind of final fight. And so I'm really now looking forward to what the actual mechanics of Joker War are going to be. The other thing that was interesting is everybody in Gotham is so used to this behavior that they've all kind of gone to ground. Like everybody, like it's straight up Batman, like telling like Lucius Fox, Catwoman, like, yo, it's about to be a Joker event. Like a Joker event is now a natural disaster in Gotham City, like to the point where they have protocols. Everybody's just, and so the best part of this issue is learning that the villains have. So the Penguin, Catwoman eventually wakes up, you know, they get her out of the hospital because that's the big thrilling is she's in the hospital getting surgery, but Joker's going to take her out and Batman knows it and it's this race against time. But they get there and she's gone and it turns out Penguin got her out because Penguin has this place called the Cold Room, which is like a Arctic themed kind of lounge club where all of Gotham's villains go to hide out during Joker events. So it's like this exclusive club of villains where they just lay low during a Joker event. And so that was a great scene. That was actually really funny.
I thought that was great. And I agree with you. I think, I actually agree with you on pretty much all of that because like Tynion's whole, you know, Bat-Cat callback to Kings, like that whole conversation, it was very much felt like City of Bane, felt like right out of that. And it was nice to see that. So I also just like that, you know, there's the issue, the cover kind of teased, like, is this the end? And I was like, I was kind of actually happy to like that it wasn't some big change. That was just this natural progression of their relationship and that kind of thing. And then the part with the beginning and the part where he's talking to Lucius, yes, that's very introspective. And I like that. But I agree with you on like the fractured nature of it. Like the last two pages feel like they're part of a different book. It's like Batman just talking to himself and he's like kind of sort of talking to Alfred, but all of a sudden he has a new costume on that doesn't have any rips in it and he looks fully healed and he's standing on the roof and it's I understood what the meaning was, like they wants to be a better Batman, but it just felt like, how did we get here from the last page where he's like looking all beat up and like he's on the run, and it was weird. Yeah, like that,
I mean, they've set up a lot to explain the deeper themes of this. I'm still a little concerned about, like, Joker seems like a little bit out of character. Batman's talking about like self-help book stuff. Like, I mean, it could be something very profound, but they got to really pull it off.
I do love the idea that, and you see it some in here and you'll definitely see it in the next issue, is the whole, all of the things that like we've criticized about, like, why is Batman getting a new gadget like every issue? Like, why is Batman like investing in this company in this issue? And like, he gets the bat train and he gets a new bat glove and he gets all this stuff, right? And the thing that they are kind of building up is that, one, right, Joker is focused on Bruce Wayne as well as Batman, not just Batman. He's taking the city as a whole for his plan, as opposed to just a chess game with Batman. And on top of that, we're kind of getting down to the core of like who Batman is. And over this run, we've seen Batman's reliance on all the gadgets, on all the money, on all the people that he can just, hey, make me this, you know, do this. And Joker's breaking all that down. And so at the end, it's going to be like, oh, well, we're kind of getting a back to basics Batman. And it's like a long way to get there, but it's interesting if it's pulled off right. And I like the idea. So I'm just hoping that, you know, now that we have all the set pieces done, we can kind of move into that story because that narrative is interesting to me. So I was hoping it works.
Yeah, me too. Fingers crossed. Need a good comic event this summer. All right. I think we got time for one more. Let's do Deceased because that was a more interesting book. So Deceased, if you guys haven't read this, you really got to go back and kind of check this out. This is Tom Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I get my Kings and my Taylors mixed up.
So does everyone on social media.
But yeah, that was an old colonial English joke. Anyway, so Deceased is basically a zombie event series. It's kind of the Walking Dead of DC. And it was surprisingly good. It basically is a story where the anti-life equation kind of gets out and creates this, it mutates and becomes this thing that turns people into zombies. And it quickly begins to wash over Earth, and DC's heroes have to find a way to stop it, but it's not a happy story because they don't. They can't stop it, and Earth gets absorbed by the zombie apocalypse, essentially, and a lot of DC heroes get taken out. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, Flash, like all of the Justice League basically gets killed. And the end of the series was Batman's son Damian, Superman's son Jonathan, and a handful of surviving DC heroes basically have to take an arc and leave Earth with some survivors and find a new home. And there was this big cliffhanger where Cyborg is left on Earth, and he was the beginning of the plague. He is where the kind of anti-life equation, it got into him and mutated and became this signal that transformed people into zombies. But he figured out there was a cure and that people could be saved. And as soon as he figured that out, zombie Wonder Woman ripped off his head so that he couldn't tell anybody. So that was the end of Deceased. Deceased Dead Planet picks up from that ending with Cyborg. Years later, Earth is basically down. And not all the heroes made it off. So some people are still kind of living on this zombie world and living that Walking Dead, Last of Us life. John Constantine being one of them. And like, yeah, it begins with basically Cyborg figuring out that Batman put a tracker in him and he
way to go tracker. Jerk Batman.
Yeah. Jerk Batman put a tracker in him to keep tabs on him, and it's in his severed head, which has been just floating around for 5 years. You know, and so he can send out a signal to this Justice League that fled Earth to bring them back. And so the Justice League on Earth 2, who kind of got off and fled to Earth 2 and now lives over there, they basically have to make the dumbest horror movie decision of all, which is, do we go back to the planet full of zombies in the scary basement? And it's like, yeah, they got to do it because it's a Justice League and it's hope. And so they have to go back and revisit Earth. And it goes about as well as you think, you know? So, yeah, Deceased. Matt, you were the person who put this on our radar. How are you feeling about this next chapter of the story?
I love it. I thought the 5 year jump was interesting because I didn't see that amount of time, because like the way they pitched the series, it seemed like it was just going to pick up, you know, maybe like 6 months later, that kind of thing. So the fact that like Cyborg's head's just been chilling on the dirt for like 5 years as he's hunting his system, because he's still sentient and his like body's laying over there, but he has no way to grab it, was crazy. And I just thought it was hilarious that even in death, Batman's like complete jerk behavior somehow maybe saved everybody. You know, I just thought that was interesting. And I love that the way they reveal, because like the reader knows there's a cure, because of course Cyborg, that comes to him at the end of the last series, but like no one else does. So when they finally get to Earth and you see he's trying to communicate, but you know, he's ahead and he's running on very low power, so like he can only get little phrases out. And you're trying to like piece together like what he's saying. And I love that it's Superman who like figures it out and then is the one that like stops Dinah, who is Black Canary and also Green Lantern, after Hal died, that like it's him that gets in the way, saves Wonder Woman, gets stabbed by this magical sword and is like, there's a cure. And that's like where it ends. And it's just a really cool place to end. I also just love the dynamic between John and Damian, because like for those who read like Super Sons and have seen in some of King's books where they kind of get to interact, they're great together. So seeing them as older, full-on heroes on this planet that they've actually been living relatively like a peaceful life, like they've enjoyed their place. And like Green Arrow is the one talking about like, why are we going back? And it hurts so much to see that he's the one that dies a pretty gruesome death here. So like it was all the Taylor stuff that I liked, like the John Constantine moment where he's having a drink with his dead friend. And so like, it's literally a box of ashes and he just keeps pouring drinks and having that at the magic bar where like there's hardly anybody anymore. All that stuff is just really interesting. Like Taylor with Injustice, he did it. And with Deceased, he finds like these big concepts that, you know, like Marvel Zombies has never done anything for me, because it didn't have the character moments and like the depth that Deceased does. So Deceased does that big epic action event with heart, and that's all prevalent here. So from what I remember, I did not read the series in between, which focused on like Harley Quinn and Poison Ivy, because they're and they mention them here, they're one of the groups that stayed behind because Ivy didn't want to leave, and so they have like an oasis somewhere on Earth. It's the green.
Ivy grew a jungle and like they have the
green. Yeah, so that I'm interested to see kind of that come in to the series. And a lot of villains didn't make the trip to the new planet, so I imagine we'll see more villains maybe in this one than heroes, because most of the heroes that didn't make the trip are just turned. So it's interesting. I also love that they made Lois Lane president. So
yeah. So that was president great. Of Earth too. So
yeah, so cool stuff.
Yeah, be sure to check out Deceased, Dead Planet, and the original if you haven't. That's all the time we got today. So that's going to do it for this episode of Comic Book Nation. We want to thank you guys for tuning in, especially during this quarantine arc. We hope we're providing you guys for some good entertainment distraction while you're sitting at home bored. If you're just now getting in the show, we put up new episodes every Wednesday and Friday on the comicbook.com website, where you can subscribe to our RSS feed and get updates about the show, or you can subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. We're on Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, Google Playlists. You can also find video of us on the comicbook.com YouTube page, or watch new episodes live on Facebook every Wednesday and Friday. You can also tell your Amazon Alexa devices to fire up Comic Book Nation Podcast, and it'll get going for you. If you want to join in any of the topics we talked about, pitch us topics, just say what's up. You can always find us at the hashtag Comic Book Nation, or you can find me at Kofi Outlaw.
You can find me at Matt Aguilar CB.
You can find me at Brandon Davis BD.
You can find me at The Wolfman.
And if you're just now getting into the show and you like it, please go on Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review. One day we will be back in the studio, and when we do, we have a whole room full of t-shirts where we give away to people whose 5-star reviews we read on the show, and we are going to read a bunch when we get back in there. So if you want a free t-shirt from the show, get on Apple Podcasts and leave those 5-star reviews. Otherwise, thank you guys for tuning in. We hope you stay checked in, stay healthy, find some kind of peace in this crazy year, and be here with us again when we come back for Comic Book Nation again. Peace.
Deuces.